municipalities. We spent a big deal on the water resources.
Craig Miller, Division Water Resources.
Brian Nicholson, Martin Nicholson, Environmental Consultants.
Marcel Shoup, National Audubon Society.
Jane Gabber, Division of Water.
Marisa Egbert, Division of Water Resources.
Catherine Bailey, Environmental Dispute Resolution Program.
Donya Ramori, University of Utah Environmental Dispute Resolution Program.
Trying to say it, I'm with the Fluid County Health Department here for a juice debate.
Linda Freitas, Friends of Great Salt Lake.
Ariel Holmes, Western Resource Advocates.
Pam Kramer, Division of Wildlife Resources.
Jeff Lukowski, Rio Tinto.
Corey Angroth, with U.S. Geological Survey.
Anne Mazzill, with the Nature Conservancy.
Nika Roundy, Davis County Community and Economic Development, Great Salt Lake Bird Festival.
Corey Faulkner, Horseshoe Fire and St. Lands.
Megan Newman, Horseshoe Fire and St. Lands.
Jamie Barnes, Horseshoe Fire and St. Lands.
Jack Gray with Utah Waterfowl Association.
And on the telephone we have?
Joe Havasey, filling in for Todd Van today.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it. And we appreciate those alternates here representing members. You received an agenda some time ago for the meeting. There have been no changes made to that agenda. I'll entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Thank you, Jeff. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Randy. Any debate or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any opposed nay? Any abstentions? It's unanimous. You also received the meeting notes of our meeting of September 12, 2018. Thank you for preparing those, Jake. We received no revisions or changes from anyone, so I'd entertain a motion to approve the meeting notes.
Good.
Thank you, Tom. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, sir. Any debate or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed
aye.
Nay? Any abstentions? It's unanimous. Let's move to our committee reports. Leland asked to be excused. He's actually up at the legislature this morning at an interim meeting. Let me just briefly report that the legislature did formally approve Tom Ward for another term at their October interim meetings. And congratulations, Tom. Welcome.
Thank you.
We have two potential or pending vacancies. Kerry Gibson, as you know, now works for the department, and Leland, who's our membership committee chair, has contacted Weber County and is trying to move that along. I think they were waiting for the election to occur and to make a decision as to who would represent them. And then, as you know, Carlton Christensen was appointed to the Utah Transit Authority Board, and which is a full-time position, and so he's leaving his position in the county. He has asked that Wilf Summercorn, who is not able to be here today, I think Salt Lake County has a
Watershed Symposium.
I'm surprised anyone here.
I know. There's a lot going on today.
But Carlton asked if Wilf Summercorn, as deputy of the county, could represent him until they sort out who the next member might be. So one thing's constant about our membership, and that is change. Let's have a brief update on the allocation of our appropriation. As you know, we approved commissioning two reports. We allocated $25,000 to those reports. An additional $100,000 has been raised to fund those reports. The requests for qualifications were sent out with the Drying Lakes Around the World report. Proposal deadline of October 31st. That deadline was met by three applicants. Those proposals are being reviewed by the selection committee. We appointed our last meeting, and next week there'll be a meeting to attempt to select a firm to do that work, or a group to do that work. The second report, an assessment of the consequences of drying Great Salt Lake, the deadline for submission of proposals for that is November 15th, tomorrow. And based upon inquiries, we anticipate also receiving several proposals. And those proposals will also be reviewed and considered early next week by the selection committee. We hope to move quickly to get those activities underway. Any questions about that? So as you may recall, Leland was asked to look into where we might productively spend some research dollars. I know he's made some inquiries and will be ready to make a report and possibly some recommendations at a January meeting. Any other questions? Okay, let's move along then. As you know, we've instituted practice of hearing from reports from the Great Salt Lake technical team. The technical team is, under the statute, a technical advisor to the advisor council. And we've asked Laura if she would provide a report today.
Sure, and we're gonna change it up just a little bit from the reports, the research projects that we've been reporting on, and just tell you a little bit about our efforts to reconstitute or reformalize the Great Salt Lake Tech team with the emergence of the Salinity Advisory Committee. And with this group, we feel there's just been a lot of change going on and some opportunity to kind of reestablish the Great Salt Lake Tech team and kind of outline and understand what the roles and responsibilities of that group are and how they relate to the Advisory Council and how they'll relate to the Salinity Advisory Committee. So the division, as you know, is responsible for retaining and encouraging the continued activity of the Great Salt Lake Tech Team. And the Tech Team's been in operation since the mid-80s, but it's been in varying levels of interaction and involvement. And we wanna just kind of formalize the process we've got going now. I think the consensus is that people like how the group is functioning. But we also wanna make sure that we get some understanding from the Advisory Council and from the Salinity Advisory Committee on how you guys would like to see the tech team operate and function. And we want to make sure that you're getting the information from the tech team that's valuable for the Advisory Council. So to that end, we're going to be meeting with a small advisory or reformation group on November 28th to kind of put down a charter for the new tech team and identify who the members of the tech team will be. But before we do that, we'd like to send out just a really brief, maybe 5-question survey to the Advisory Council to just let us know what your understanding is about the tech team and what the roles and responsibilities are and how or if you would like to see some more interaction between groups. So if you just give 5 minutes between now and the 28th when you see that survey come out, it would be really helpful. And I think that's it. We'll have hopefully a draft charter and I can share it with you at the next meeting if you'd like.
Thank you, Laura. Any questions? Tom?
Is there a recommendation from staff or is it more you're just gathering input at this point?
Make a motion from you all to move forward with
the direction you're going is the direction you recommended, or are you looking for?
You're looking. You believe there's efficiencies of pulling those together. So
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah. And functioning much the way the groups have formed in recent past. I think we're just adding the Salinity Advisory Committee, and so there's some confusion about what the roles and responsibilities are there. So if we could just clarify each group's roles a little better, it might be helpful.
Okay.
Other questions? Thank you, Laura. Some time ago, the Great Salt Lake Advisory Council recommended and endorsed funding from the Water Quality Board to establish to develop a Great Salt Lake Water Quality Strategy. As part of that funding approval by the Water Quality Board, there was a requirement that the division report back to both not only the Water Quality Board but also to the Advisory Council on the progress towards the Great Salt Lake Water Quality Strategy. And Jake Vanderland, who helps staff our group, has been tasked to present that report today. So Jake.
Yeah. Thanks, Don. As Don mentioned, we're obligated to report back to you guys on the progress we've made in implementing our water quality strategy for the lake. I think it's been quite some time since we've done that, so it's a great opportunity, I think, for us to come here and show you guys what we've been working on. And we have a number of different projects kind of up in the air that we're working on simultaneously, so this is sort of a broad-ranging and general set of a talk, but if you're interested in details, we can talk about that afterward. So, with that, I'll just start with DWQ's vision for Great Salt Lake, which was spelled out in the initial water quality strategy, and that is for the lake to continue to provide important recreational, ecological, and economic benefits for both current and future generations. And some background here that you guys probably already know plenty about. Great Salt Lake, of course, is a super important ecosystem from ecological standpoints, from economic standpoints, from a human health standpoint, and also I think from a social and cultural value standpoint for our state. So it's a huge, important resource, and that's why we've developed this strategy to help protect it. And again, as you guys know, the lake is cooperatively managed. We have multiple different state agencies, federal agencies, as well as stakeholder groups like the Advisory Council here and others to provide input on how we manage the lake. And then, of course, it's been divided into four main bays, and the water chemistry and biota among those bays vary widely, and so that impacts the way that we develop standards for the lake in general. So the state's basis for managing the lake is based on the Clean Water Act. The objective of the Clean Water Act was to restore and maintain the chemical, physical, and biological integrity of the nation's waters. And essentially, it's established for both EPA and the state entities responsible for administering it, the structure to establish water quality standards, assess use attainment, as well as regulate pollutant discharges as appropriate. So that kind of sets us up in this cycle where we define the uses of a water body, monitor water quality there, assess whether the uses are being attained, identify pollution sources if it's not being attained, and then reduce those pollution sources to go back and meet that that use eventually. So for Great Salt Lake, we have defined beneficial uses. It's a single beneficial use, but it kind of includes two components. One is the recreational use. So we have primary and secondary contact recreation. So that includes things like swimming in Gilbert Bay, but also things like wading or boating in other parts of the lake. But then there's also an ecological component, and that is the lake is protected for waterfowl, shorebirds, and other water-oriented wildlife, including their food chain. So we have the uses, but what's really kind of blocked us from going through this Clean Water Act cycle in general has been the lack of water quality criteria for Great Salt Lake. Because it's a unique ecosystem, because it has sort of unusual chemistry, unique biota, we can't just take the normal water quality criteria that we would apply to the rest of the state or to other waters throughout the nation and apply them to Great Salt Lake. We have to go through and develop our own. And so that kind of puts a little bit of a monkey wrench in this cycle, but we've been working really hard to remedy that and to develop standards so that we can fully implement the Clean Water Act for the lake. Of course, there's also some other challenges that go along with standards as well as just general water chemistry in Great Salt Lake. The analytical methods for hypersaline waters are really complicated. It's really hard to actually detect trace elements in a very salty matrix because there's so much noise from other constituents that it's hard to tell how much of a pollutant is actually there. In the past, we've generally lacked baseline water quality data. So it wasn't routinely monitored in the past, and we didn't have a good sense for how water quality varies through time and space on the lake. And then again, we have these unique organisms that are not typical for toxicity tests, and so we don't understand the responses that they'll have to various pollutants, which makes it, again, hard to develop criteria. But to remedy some of those problems, we developed the Great Salt Lake Water Quality Strategy. And it's a five-component strategy looking at developing water quality criteria for aquatic life uses, developing a strategic monitoring program, developing a wetland program, and then building a nutrient assessment component and recreational use criteria as well. So it's kind of this collective set of components going into an overarching strategy to help protect the lake's water quality. And to date, we have implemented both aquatic life use criteria components and a strategic monitoring component. We've been working on those for quite a while. As I mentioned before, there's a lot of complicating factors, and it takes a long time and a lot of work to start building those things. But we've recently been making, I think, some good progress on that. So the next piece of my presentation is basically a progress report on what we have done so far. And starting with the baseline monitoring program. So we implemented a baseline monitoring program in 2011, and we monitor biannually at 11 sites. This is kind of a neat program too. It's a collaborative program where we contract to USGS and they help do most of the monitoring out in Gilbert Bay, but then we also work with Davis County Health Department and our own monitoring crews to do some of the Farmington Bay and Bear River Bay sites. So it's kind of a good collaborative program as well. But the goals of that program were really just to establish a baseline conditions so that we can detect how water chemistry has changed over time and detect any pollutants as they may occur. And so that program, we monitor water chemistry components, including things like nutrients, trace metals, in particular selenium and mercury are of concern, algal growth as measured by chlorophyll A. But then we also have a biological component where we sample brine shrimp, again, for trace metals mostly, as well as bird eggs for trace metals, so that we can monitor those impacts on the biota of the lake as well. One of the major outgrowths of the aquatic life use component, or aquatic life use criteria development component, was actually not a criteria, but the realization that we needed an interim program to help protect the lake while we develop all those criteria. Because it's going to take a really long time to develop criteria for all the important pollutants in the lake. And so we need something kind of in between to help regulate existing discharges and protect Great Salt Lake from any pollutants that might be in them. So to do that, we implemented an interim permitting program. And essentially what that is we've applied certain standards to all the discharges to the lake, including things like screening of pollutants in the discharge against freshwater criteria so that we at least have sort of a baseline on things that we might expect to be problematic, as well as something called whole effluent toxicity testing, which is pretty much just what it sounds like, taking the effluent from a discharge, exposing organisms to it and observing their responses. And then the implementation of technology-based effluent limits, which are essentially the standards that we can apply based on the best available and practical technology. So together, those things, we've applied those to all of the permits, all the discharges that go directly to Great Salt Lake. And that's our intermediary step to protect the lake while we develop the rest of the criteria. I just said that, so. So moving actually into aquatic life use standards development. So the selenium standard was not specifically under the Great Salt Lake Water Quality Strategy, but is an important standard. So this is the one numeric criterion that we do have for Great Salt Lake. It took over 5 years to fully develop, and it identified the most sensitive endpoint as bird reproduction and selenium in bird egg tissue. So we developed a criterion to protect bird eggs and that waterfowl use against from selenium. And then we monitor and assess against that criterion as part of our baseline program. So this is the part that actually came from the water quality strategy, which was a set of custom toxicity tests for Great Salt Lake specific biota. So that's the brine shrimp and brine flies. And we've been conducting toxicity tests for priority pollutants, including arsenic, copper, and lead. So we're just starting to wrap up the acute tests for those parameters. We expect to have reports back from our contractor on those in the next several months. But I think the really important thing here is less about these specific pollutants and these specific tests, but that it's laying the sort of groundwork, establishing a system for actually conducting these tests for the rest of the pollutants at other timescales as well, so including both acute and chronic tests. And here's just a couple of pictures of what that looks like. So we had to do some pretty unique stuff for these Great Salt Lake specific toxicity tests. In particular, normally you would not want to feed your test organisms because you introduce a potential source of error there or a source of contamination there. But we could not keep brine flies and brine shrimp alive during the duration of the test without feeding them. So a system for culturing algae and feeding the shrimp during the test had to be developed So it's kind of a unique, special case. So that's what that picture on the left is. It's just the cultures of algae that are being used to feed the test organisms. And then on the right is a series of jars with the test organisms in them. And effectively what you do is just dose them with known concentrations of a pollutant. And then you see how they respond, count the number of mortalities observed. And then you can start calculating things like this, where you can plot the survival rate of your test organism against the concentration of your pollutant over a series of replicate tests, and start to develop those thresholds at which pollutants have negative impacts on these biota. So I mentioned earlier that some of the monitoring and the assessment that we do, so I wanted to show some of the results of what we've been seeing so far. So these are the bird eggs that are collected as part of our baseline monitoring program. And the top graph is mercury concentrations in bird egg tissue, and the bottom graph is selenium concentrations. And this is kind of interesting because you can see that they actually tend to sort of correspond with one another, which suggests that there's some related underlying issues that contribute to that. But you can also see they kind of tend to fluctuate from year to year, but without a real obvious trajectory. But to add a little context, here's the selenium standard in that red dashed line. So you can see that although it fluctuates from year to year and it fluctuates in space as well, we haven't seen really concerning levels of selenium in bird eggs at this point. So that's a positive result. So that's kind of what we've been seeing sort of in a nutshell. I wanted to talk a little bit about where we're going as well. So here's some of our future directions. So one of the first ones is this wetland component. Wetlands are a really important part of the Great Salt Lake ecosystem. And so we've been working to develop a wetland component and a set of uses and criteria, again, to protect those wetlands. And so I don't manage this part of our program. This is managed by Becca Downard, my coworker. But some of our ongoing work here, we've been doing conservation action planning meetings, which I know several of you have been involved in. We've been working to define specific beneficial uses for specific wetlands around Great Salt Lake. And then based on those use definitions, we can start to develop assessment methods and both potentially numeric and narrative water quality criteria to protect those uses. The other major component that we're starting to move towards is a nutrient component. And so kind of just a little background on what nutrients are and why we care about them for Great Salt Lake. When we talk about nutrients, we're basically talking about any element that is required for production in an ecosystem. In aquatic ecosystems, we're normally talking about nitrogen and phosphorus. So those are necessary ecosystem components. They're the base of the food web. They're what feeds the brine shrimp and the birds and the brine flies. But we also know that our human activities within the watershed can alter the loads and concentrations of nutrients in the lake, and that can have impacts on the biota in the lake. So that's really why we care. And what we care about are things like when, where, and how much production is occurring. Which organisms are favored by certain nutrient conditions, and then potential sort of side effect impacts on things like dissolved oxygen, pH, or other important water quality parameters. Why do we need a nutrient component? Kind of like what I was just talking about, we know that there are both point and non-point sources of anthropogenic nutrients in the watershed. That includes urban and agricultural land uses. It includes municipal and industrial discharges. It also includes some natural background concentrations as well. But of course, we have the potential to alter those loads, which has potential for ecological impacts. At this point, we don't have numeric nutrient criteria or an assessment process for determining what are appropriate nutrient concentrations. And so that's the kind of the need for developing this component and the sort of essential pieces of that component. So working from there, just sort of brainstorming the sorts of things that I think we need to learn, what do we want to know about nutrients in the lake. I think one big missing component right now is a full nutrient budget. So that's looking at what are the ins and outs, how are nutrients cycled within the lake and reprocessed and reused. That's a really important component that we're starting to sort of work our way towards better understanding. One of the other interesting things is, you know, there are a number of entities that monitor nutrient or algae-related, productivity-related type parameters on the lake. But what we haven't done so far is compare the different methods, both lab and field sampling methods, to see are they consistent with one another? Can we compare them? Can we combine data sets to build a bigger data set? So that's, yeah, so both in the field sampling and in the analytical method aspects of those monitoring programs. And then characterizing those impacts. How does that affect how do nutrients into the lake affect both pelagic, so the water column and the bottom of the lake food webs, as well as wetlands. And then again, when, where, and how much is kind of the key set of questions for nutrients. So because of our baseline monitoring program and because of some of the other programs that are monitoring on the lake, in particular the USGS and DNR monitoring programs, we do have a pretty nice time series of nutrients, among other constituents, but nutrients in particular, for the lake. And so this is a plot showing phosphorus, nitrogen, and then a comparison to salinity as kind of a baseline to compare against. And then the our monitoring program, we sample both at the surface, so a half meter below the surface, as well as at the bottom, so a half meter above the bottom, because we know that there are those important gradients vertically in the lake. So the orange triangles are deep samples, and then the blue circles are the surface samples. And so what's cool in this graph is you can see this distinction between a deep layer of high concentration in both phosphorus, nitrogen, as well as in salinity. So that's kind of that deep brine layer signal. And then you can see that kind of dissipate and mix through. And so it's consistent with the surface layers from about 2014 to say 2017 or so. And then as that new causeway breach has been opened, you can start to see them differentiate again. So it's kind of a neat pattern to see that in a time series. And then again, from that sort of data, we can do some pretty cool things, like build these sort of spatial maps of where of various nutrient concentrations. So this is just an example of total nitrogen throughout the lake. And you can see that, you know, Farmington Bay is kind of a hot spot for total nitrogen. Bear River Bay is quite a bit lower, and then Gilbert Bay is kind of that in between those two. And then the last thing I want to talk about are some of the tools that we've been working on building. This is really with all those other components in mind, and in particular with that nutrient component in mind. I'm trying to kind of lay the groundwork for moving forward into those components. And we've been working to build a variety of tools to both query and analyze data to kind of build that background knowledge for developing those components. So here's an example of that. If you've seen some of the work from USGS calculating nutrient pools in Gilbert Bay, this is basically a replication of that process, but expanded to include multiple parameters. And again, you can see this, I should have made the colors different actually to match the other one, but this upper brine layer here is in orange, and you can see it's kind of this consistently high, relatively flat pool of phosphorus and nitrogen. But then you can see as the deep brine layer occurs and then dissipates, you kind of see it fluctuate in and out. And it generally tracks the salinity or the salt mass balance as well. So, and then similarly, you know, you can calculate the pools of available nutrients in the lake itself, but then we also want to know the loads to the lake. So we started working on calculating those loads as well. So this is basically the mass of nutrients entering the lake from all of its riverine contributors. And this is really rough. We've just kind of started working on that. So the last thing I wanted to show is a tool that we've been building to help visualize all this data and analyze all this data in real time. So this is an interactive web app that we've built, which queries data from the USGS database as well as imports data from our own database to basically make all these interactive plots that you can go through and change, you know, your date range, add rulers, all kinds of interesting stuff to interact with the data in real time. And right now, I've broken this into four sections. So we have the lake levels, which, you know, I think we're all pretty well familiar with. But then we also have these plots. And you can see that the plots that I presented in the presentation are from here. So for example, if you wanted to see, let's say, how water temperature has varied in the lake over the course of these years, you can see it fluctuate up and down seasonally, but kind of trend flat over the course of those years. And there's multiple ways to look at all of these data. So you can look at box plots, scatter plots of paired parameters. We also have our metals data in here. So you can look at, let's say, water, mercury, brine shrimp mercury, and bird egg mercury as time series compared to one another, which is kind of handy. And then we also have that sort of interpolated water quality map that we can look at as well. And this is a publicly available tool. We haven't sort of formally distributed it, but I would invite you guys to go ahead and look into it. It's available at this web link. And right now we're working on sort of figuring out how to actually distribute this formally. This is kind of a new set of tools and a new way of thinking about distributing information to the public. So if folks have time to look through it and have ideas or feedback, that would be great. Sort of the way I visualize this going is similar to the way we've used a similar tool for our Utah Lake program, which is that we wrote a report about Utah Lake, distributed that to the public as well as to a science panel. And this was sort of a companion product to that. So it's sort of an opportunity for us to provide context for the tool, then also for others to provide feedback back to the tool. So that's what I've got to show you guys, and I'm happy to answer any questions if I have time.
You're a fast talker, Jake.
I tend to talk fast.
I mean that in a complimentary way.
Yes?
Yeah, I was wondering, when you do your wet tests, do you use natural lake water as matrix and then add mercury and selenium to achieve your toxic concentrations?
No, so it's really just the effluent coming from the facility. So we don't have to add things to it. It's really just a test of whether the organisms present would respond to effluent. And several of our permitters or permitted discharges are full whole effluent toxicity testing, meaning there's no dilution, but some of those that discharge to tributaries to the lake can dilute those wet tests out. But we're not adding pollutants to those tests. We're just exposing the organisms to effluent.
It's just a variety. What about the salt lake itself? If you're developing the merit criteria in salt lake, then are you adjusting the salinity as well as the...
Yes, so that's related to the actual numeric criteria testing, the toxicity testing, the pictures I showed. And in that case, we did develop a synthetic Great Salt Lake matrix. So we needed to make sure that we had a matrix that was not contaminated already. So you develop that synthetic matrix and then add constituents, pollutants as appropriate to measure the responses. Yeah, and that was actually, I don't think I mentioned that, but that was a big challenging component as well. Even just getting a salt matrix up to 12% can be hard in a lab. It'll start to precipitate out. So there's something a little bit different about the chemistry in Great Salt Lake that makes that happen. But that was a big challenge.
Jeff, why does it take so long to develop the numeric standards? What goes into that? Why does it take many, many years?
Yeah, well, in part because of some of the issues we were just talking about. I mean, we have to. This is a new frontier. We have to redevelop the whole process. Basically, we have to develop a synthetic matrix to test organisms in. We have to develop a system for keeping those organisms alive to and through the test as appropriate. And that's just it's a big process to do that. We have to actually raise our own organisms. So you have to work on their life cycle as well. It's just a lot of work, and a lot of it is sort of pioneering work. So it's been a big challenge.
Thanks. Other questions? Thank you, Jake.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. At our last advisory council meeting, Donya Rumor of the Environmental Dispute Resolution Program at the University of Utah College of Law indicated an interest in managing a process involving the Great Salt Lake. So we invited her here today to tell us a little bit about that process and let us consider whether and how to proceed.
Excellent. Good morning, everyone. Again, Donya Ramori with the EDR program. I also have Catherine Daly here with our Environmental Dispute Resolution program. She's going to pass a couple flyers out to the council here on the table. We have flyers in case anybody else wants them. I really appreciate the council making a little time for us to talk this morning and to share some ideas with you all. And really, more than anything, we want some feedback. So I'm going to try to go over a lot of material. I also talk quite quickly to leave some time for some questions and feedback at the end of it. Just so folks know, the Environmental Dispute Resolution Program focuses on supporting collaborative problem solving around environmental and natural resource issues throughout the Mountain West, with a particular focus on Utah, since our state. We do have a flyer about the EDR program if folks want to know more. And as I think a lot of folks know, because you were there in the room, we held a dialogue on collaboration on the Great Salt Lake back in June. Through that conversation, we learned that there's a lot going on around the Great Salt Lake and maybe some opportunities to do things even a little bit better. And that's what I want to talk about today. In case anyone's interested, our next dialogue and collaboration is on air quality, which seems like a topical topic, and it's on December 6th. So we have flyers about that as well. So through our conversations at that dialogue back in June and talking with a lot of people here in the room and a lot of people who aren't here in the room prior to that event, we learned that there really are, as you all know, many entities, agencies, coordinating bodies working on the Great Salt Lake, and really a lot of really good and important work happening, as well as a lot of really valuable collaboration, right? But one of the challenges is there's almost so much going on, right? And this is just kind of give you a sense of all this different thing. There's more people, more organizations, but there's almost so much going on that it's, people say, almost kind of problematic, right? Like the dots aren't always getting connected. Maybe some of the most important conversations aren't happening in the right forums. People are starting to feel spread too thin, perhaps, which is its own problem. We see it quite often. And that there really might be an opportunity for consolidating efforts, for focusing efforts, for prioritizing, and really focusing on the kind of key creative and collaborative policy solutions that are going to really move things forward. And I think, as has been talked about in this room a lot, there's still, the lake is still at risk, right? We're doing a lot of good work, but the lake is still at risk. And so we started thinking at the EDR program, you know, what's needed? How do we get beyond kind of still being at risk, even though there's so much good work happening? And how can we, a program that's designed to serve the state, be helpful, if at all, in moving that forward? So we started talking to folks, again, a lot of people here in the room and others, about the idea of what we call a situation assessment and whether that could be helpful at this point in time and really stepping back and looking at what's happening and how to prioritize our efforts going forward. And we received a lot of interest and support in that idea. So that's why I wanted to bring it to the advisory council and really get some feedback and get a sense of whether this, is it the right time, is it the right approach, could it be helpful? So what is a situation assessment? It's really a best practice strategy used by neutral facilitators and other collaborative process designers, as we call ourselves, to really understand the history of a complex situation. Sometimes that's an explicit conflict. Sometimes it's just a really challenging situation, perhaps like we have with the Great Salt Lake. And really to understand what's working well, what's maybe working a little bit less well, what could maybe be done a little bit better, what are areas of agreement and disagreement. Sometimes people think they disagree a lot more than they do, or they think they have a lot more in agreement than they do, and that can actually inhibit effective action. And really whether more collaborative approaches are needed, or in this case, you know, whether we maybe need to restructure how we're working together and how do we really focus our efforts. So again, these assessments are used often in situations of explicit conflict. And they're also used in situations where things are just really complex and we maybe need to step back and really assess how are we doing, could we be doing things more efficiently and more effectively? Catherine and I were trying to think of what's a good analogy, and the best one we came up with is, you know, often businesses are working quite well, but they're not quite where they want to be. So they hire a consultant who comes in with fresh eyes, fresh perspective, and can look at things and identify those high priority strategies. Identify this stuff's working really well, let's keep this going, and maybe let's put some energy over here. So that's kind of the idea, right? Coming in with fresh eyes, fresh perspective, and really being able to provide a new perspective on how we might move forward. So that the hunch that we had that this kind of assessment could be quite helpful was really reinforced at the last advisory council meeting when the letter for the governor to the governor was floated by everybody, and I think we'll talk about that here in a moment. And some things that really stood out to both me and Catherine in looking at that letter is these quotes that were pulled directly from the initial draft letter. that there is an urgent need to implement a focused policy effort to address the precipitous decline of lake level and overall health of the Great Salt Lake, that there's a need for creative policy decisions that will effectively balance the state's need for growth while minimizing the downward trend in lake elevations, and that aligning these concepts in an overall policy framework for the Great Salt Lake will be successful in creating win-win solutions for a large and diverse set of stakeholders. Right, again, like we're doing a lot of good work, but there's still more work that's needed, and we need to figure out what that work is in some ways. What are the priorities? It also really stood out to us that as we heard from the council in reflection on that letter, sort of what's the ask of the governor, right? What do we want to prioritize? What are we asking the governor to prioritize? That's a really complicated question, right? And those are the kinds of things that an assessment like this helps us understand. You know, what are the widely supported solutions that the governor could actually advocate for that would really have an impact? I think probably there's a lot of different perspectives on that, and we can start to illuminate those things and get a lot of ideas from a lot of people, including people who aren't necessarily here in the room, but might have a lot to add to that conversation. So, what is an assessment? I'm guessing you're asking that question by now. The basic idea is that an assessment is allowed to just really, again, help us wrap our heads around what's going on, but the way that we do it is we start by doing a heck of a lot of background research. In a case like the Great Salt Lake, there are so many reports, so many assessments, so many bodies. We have a pretty good sense of that, but I think everybody has a piece of that puzzle and just really looking at what have we already done, what can we build on, and where do we need to go from there? And then we leverage that to do a lot of in-depth interviews. In this case, it could be anywhere from 60 to 100 in-depth interviews with key folks, including a lot of people who are here in the room. And again, maybe some of your not so usual suspects. And then we put all the information we learned from that together to really identify, you know, what do we know, what do we not know? Often we find through these assessments that people think they have all the data they need, but there are actually some really critical gaps, and just filling those gaps could really be quite profound. Again, what do people agree on? What are areas of disagreement and why? And what does that mean for moving forward? What is working well? What is working not so well? Sometimes there are different perspectives on that, and through putting together the pieces of the puzzle, we get more clarity. And who needs to be involved and how? Often we find that there are certain parties who could be really impactful who are not being as involved as they need to be. I hear often in the conversation about the Great Salt Lake that maybe some more support from the legislature would be really helpful. I don't know, right? I come with beginner's mind, but I want to hear what a lot of people have to say about that, and then who we need to engage and how we do that. So where does it lead? Some of the things that would come out of an assessment like this, we believe, and there could be more things that we achieve, is that it could inform the Great Salt Lake Advisory Council's work going forward, right? What is the key stuff that you're really pushing on the governor to put energy into? And can we actually make the case that it would be widely supported, right? That those strategies actually have broad support. So one of the key things of these assessments is they can basically give a political foundation for those who must take action and say, actually, if you do this, you have the support that you need. We've talked to a lot of folks and we're pretty confident in that. It also can identify some of the ways that universities and other partners can be helpful. And if there are key data gaps, we can start to go to others and say, can you help us fill these gaps? And really, again, just helping the advisory council and other parties prioritize efforts going forward and hopefully doing so in a concerted way. Because again, often we find people are kind of acting in different directions and we just need to bring that a little more together to really get where we want to go. So, I mean, the real goal here is, again, I think we all have this mission of the Great Salt Lake not drying up, right? Of being the one place that could get ahead of it, that could keep from being a toxic dust bowl by being proactive and being the icon for other places. And I think that there's so much good work already happening. We want to make sure that if we get involved, it would actually be helpful towards achieving that goal. And again, we've talked to enough people, we think it would be. But we wanted to bring this to the advisory council and the others in the room and get a sense of, do we feel like now's a good time to do this kind of thing? Would this be helpful? And if so, how do we focus it, right? What are the things we really could help inform, whether it be the letter to the governor or any variety of other things? So I think with that, I will just take whatever remaining time I have and try to get a little input from you all. So any thoughts, reactions, ideas? And I guess actually I should just say that one thing we really want to do is make sure we have sort of the blessings of the advisory council, right? That you think this is good enough and that you would support it. We will be putting together a funding package to support this work. We anticipate it's going to cost about $30,000 with additional cost match from our program. We've talked to a lot of different agencies and organizations who have expressed an interest in supporting it. We would welcome support from the advisory council, but more than anything, we just want to make sure that you think it's a good idea and that we should go forward with it. So. I talk fast, don't I? But now I have 5 minutes for questions. Yes.
To go through that process, what's the time?
That's a great question. So we take the time we need to, and that sometimes means that we need to talk to a lot more people than we thought we needed to, and we make sure we do that. We anticipate that about a 3 to 5 month horizon from when we really get going is probably realistic, in part just because a lot of times we can't get a hold of certain people for a while, so we just try to build in that flex time. So it's kind of a 3 to 5 month horizon, and it will resort in a written report that we keep as succinct as possible, but even just putting everything together with the Great Salt Lake will be a real fun challenge. A good question. Yeah, other questions? Yes.
I was just wondering, has there been like an awareness assessment of how much public, or is that going to be part of this program?
It's something we hear often, right? The public doesn't care, the public doesn't know. I suspect one of the recommendations would be, let's work together and develop a survey to really understand where the public is at. That wouldn't be part of this particular assessment, but I think getting the sense of the questions we would need to ask the public is very likely to be something we would hear. And I've done a lot of this work elsewhere where typically people who are really involved think the public cares less than they do. I don't know in this case whether that's, you know, they are concerned or not, but I think that's probably a recommendation we're going to find. Yeah.
Laura?
Who would be the lead entity for this? Is it the advisory council or is it
That is
everyone
a great question. That is a great question. So we always have a convener or conveners for assessments. Right? We don't do work unless we're invited in, and I think that's one question that if the council thinks this is something worth going forward with, I'd want to get your thoughts on that, whether the council co-convenes or whether we try to escalate it up to the heads of DEQ and DNR or even ask the governor to convene it. Again, I'm open to different ways of doing that, but I think I would really welcome the advice of the council on what's the most effective way to do that.
Craig, go ahead.
It seems like there's lots of opportunities for collaboration, but getting the right motivation to have that happen is what's lacking. Do you provide that somehow?
Well, the answer is actually yes, right? So framing is so important, and I think there actually is a lot of really good collaboration already happening, and I really want to honor that. And I think sometimes, and I've worked in a lot of situations where people are like, we're working together really well, and we're not getting there. And our takeaway is, well, then you're probably not working together the way you need to. Right, and so I think in this context, refocusing those efforts and figuring out the right framing that really motivates people to do the things they need to do. And frankly, I think there's a lot of folks, including the public, who just don't accept the risk of this lake drying up. I mean, I'm partially here because I own property in Salt Lake and I want to stay here, right? And if that lake dries up, we don't want to be here. And so I think that sometimes helping make that risk really visible for folks and translating into their interests, whether it's economic, environmental, or otherwise, can actually be quite powerful in bringing people to the table. But my suspicion, again, is we're going to find that nobody wants that lake to dry up. They just may not be motivated right now to put all the money or resources into it that they might need to. And so then we start to think about how do we make it salient for the people who really need to invest. So again, another great question.
I really like this. A couple thoughts. Mm-hmm. One, I like the two comments about kind of the assessment and building the awareness. I think there are certain members within the community that really understand where we're at and what the needs are. Mm-hmm. And then there are others that are perhaps greatly impacted that have no idea mm-hmm. what might yeah. happen. And I think as at least Jeff and Don and I and others have talked about reaching out to the governor is trying to elevate that. Mm-hmm. But a letter's not going to do that. It's going to fall on deaf ears if there's not a sense of understanding. So I don't know if it's part of this or maybe within the context of that, the awareness assessment and educational campaign. The second question I have, though, is I think there are members within the broader community, if they hear there's an environmental dispute resolution program, their initial response is, okay, what are we fighting about?
Yeah, I know.
Do we fight?
I didn't get to name my program. I would change that.
So is there another topic? Yeah. I mean, is this,
yeah.
I think, no offense, please.
No, I will take it back to my uppers. I've been looking for the reason to change my name.
That title is DOA in Utah.
Yeah.
At least for
yeah.
the people we want at the table that aren't already here.
Sure.
But let me give you an example. I think some others are aware that head of DNR, Mike Styler, just was asked on the water rights side of things to tackle some tough issues. There were some things going on, and he took that and used, I think, elements of what you would call dispute resolution, bringing the stakeholders to the table mm-hmm. and he had several committees, and each committee had at least 30 people at each meeting, and there were four of them. And out of that, what's happening at the Natural Resources right now, they're hearing recommendations of legislation, and the third one that I was able to listen to all got votes of moving forward.
Yeah, consensus, right?
Right, and so, mm-hmm. but where that started from is there was it did start with a little bit of dispute. You know, people recognized they had conflicting issues and needs. The reason I mention that is you have a director of natural resources that many in this room work for, and many others who influence policy and regulation, ultimately reporting to the governor, who's embraced this idea and actually has been very effective in that.
Yeah.
The impetus of the letter we've talked about, I think that some of the next steps we'll be talking about was reaching out to Mike Styler and others so that something isn't hitting the governor's office before they have a chance to weigh in. I have heard that within the departments, the various ones underneath, they're starting to have a consensus of need. So, but I would be a little bit apprehensive of introducing something that invokes a visceral negative response before some of the legwork can happen at the different divisions and the department head, and then saying, well, here's a mechanism that probably fits very closely, Mr. Styler, with what you did very successfully with the legislature in this last session. Because ultimately, what we're looking for is empowering through the governor and the legislature funding and statutory change. We already have a vehicle that's kind of working. I would hate to introduce something that's seen as something different than what they're doing. It's actually, I think, very similar, but just the vernacular may invoke a negative response.
Yeah. And there's a lot in what you just said, right? But I think that one key thing is whatever we do, we want it to wrap around and dovetail with the other things.
Yeah.
And we have really good relationships with DNR, DEQ, pretty much most of the state agencies working on environmental and natural resource issues. We've trained a lot of their staff, and we've convened Mike and others together to talk about collaboration. So just to say, we have good relationships there that we, I think, would build on. And the first step before we do this is kind of the convening assessment of talking to those high-level folks and saying, here's kind of what we're thinking. How do we target this to be useful to your agency and to build on what you're doing and not be conflicting? And even ask Mike to reach out to some of those tricky stakeholders to make a joke about the name of our program, or he can introduce me otherwise. That it really is a very apt point. And so we find ways to get to those folks, and we've done this in a lot of trickier places. Like, we do grazing collaboratives, right? So those are very appropriate points, and we also are used to doing work in that kind of space.
So in my mind, I'm just thinking that putting those pieces, pulling out the comment about the awareness and the education, and then saying, oh, we have a number of tools. Mr. Starley, you've got your brand of one. We have this other tried and true one. Introducing that after we've had the conversation about the awareness and the education side, so that the whole program doesn't get dismissed by a simple title. Sort of.
Agreed. Yeah, that's, and that's again, I think that having the council pave the way, if you think it's useful, will be quite important, because again, we know that how it starts matters a lot. So that's, I think, a much bigger conversation. If we decide to go forward with this, I think that's a conversation I'd really like to have with the council.
But I love that there's a model and as a group of people that develop the expertise in applying that.
Jeff?
Yeah, I know we've got the next one coming up. You used the word collaboration a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my suggestion, is environmental collaboration.
Yes, I'm taking this back to my center. it's so true. And that's
we've disagreed in here, but I don't ever feel like it's gotten necessarily disagreeable. Yeah. Everybody's respected everybody else's opinions, even if they haven't completely agreed with them. And I think we've come to some good consensus. The Great Salt Lake Advisory Council report, the water for Great Salt Lake, when we went through and we prioritized those, in my opinion, that would be a great starting point, because that's kind of been the consensus of this group and kind of a step to move forward in the areas that we'd like to see, take place first. And I think a lot of those are addressed in the letter that you gentlemen put together, which I think is excellent. So I think if we did the collaboration and kind of started there, if the council decides to go forward, it'd be a good framework.
I like what Jeff is mentioning, if I can interlude. I think the term environmental also is a loaded resource,
oh, yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
The department in the state is called natural resources. Both sides of the legislature identify with natural resources, whether you're Republican or Democrat, or you're environmentally bent, or you're more, the spectrum. Natural resources is not a loaded term as much as environmental. The word environmental, just.
So, I know.
So I'd like to collab- natural resource collaboration or something like that.
I work with a lot of rural counties, and I agree. But I do appreciate that, because now I can take this back to my center and advocate for a name change.
Any more comments or questions from members of the council? How about from other attendees? Going once?
Oh, we got one in the back.
You got one. Do you have another gun over there?
That's one of them.
Can I segue from this into?
Let's hold it.
Okay.
If you have a question or comment on this, okay.
No, not so much from Martha. He said going once, so I got nervous.
Yeah.
So where you have parties that are outside the immediate influence of Great Salt Lake, mm-hmm. that have important impacts on Great Salt Lake, mm-hmm. it's going to be really important to involve them.
I agree.
Collaboration too.
Yeah. And when we say stakeholder, we mean people who are affected by the problem or who drive the problem. So absolutely. And again, I think figuring out who exactly those are is its own challenge because it's such a complex system, but absolutely.
Just a quick kind of straw poll. Is there interest in continuing to consider? I hear some questions we need to have answered. I'm a little concerned we've got 6 of our principals who aren't here today, mm-hmm. and I'd like to figure out a way to get them briefed if you're interested in a further look at this.
Hey, Don, this is Joe.
Yes, Joe.
I'm very interested in it. I think the interpretation of a lot of the stakeholders' perspectives and the work that's been done and converting that into content that is useful for politicians is a really great sort of next step.
Okay. Others, quick straw poll. Are you interested in pursuing?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Maybe what I'd suggest as a next step is if I could set up a conference call with those members of the council who aren't here today with you, so you could give them the same briefing, and then we'll have some interim conversations and come back and make a decision in January.
Fantastic.
That'd be appropriate. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed nay? Any abstentions? Thank you, Commissioner.
Perfect.
Okay.
And then we'll just have some handouts about all this on the desk over there if anybody wants them, so thank you.
All right, let's move quickly to the item regarding the governor's letter, which has already been addressed. We've talked about it at a couple of meetings. I think our intention today, we've sent it out 3 times for comment. Our intention today is to determine whether an action in support is appropriate. So Jeff, do you want to give us a little summary here? You've been the key.
Yep.
And Tom have been the...
Happy to do that, and in some ways I think we should have these 2 agenda items reversed, because I think what Donya laid out was kind of the how, but what we think what the letter is the what. You know, with we can do, you know, all of this, we've seen, I think our collective thinking was that we've seen lots and lots of groups that are all kind of moving in the same direction in a whole bunch of different pieces, but there's no overarching kind of policy governing Great Salt Lake, or to bring all of these things together, and how do you do that? I think Donnie's just laid out a great tool that we could, you know, potentially use to do exactly what we're talking about doing in this letter, which I think is fantastic. But I think without having the governor's support and the 2 directors' support, we have a lot of discussion. I don't know that it goes anywhere. So what this letter is asking, I think, is for a commitment from very highest levels of government, from the governor all the way down, to support this effort about bringing all of the entities and stakeholders together to drive a policy for the Great Salt Lake that takes a holistic approach and trying to drive those things that are truly collaborative. And win-wins for all the stakeholders, at least to the extent that you can find those. I think there are a lot of opportunities with what's going on at the legislature yesterday and this morning on changes in water law, and there's a lot of discussion. I think there's a lot of opportunities right now. I think there is a window of time when this can be done. I think that window, at least in my view, there's a horizon for this. I think it closes at some point, and I think it becomes too late as soon as the Great Salt Lake hits some threshold, whatever that might be, where you have severe species decline or water quality or air quality, it becomes too late. And I think the ramifications of that could potentially be very draconian. So I think the message ought to be that, you know, we need this policy, we need to do some of this collaborative work now, but we can't wait. And we need the support from the governor's office and governmental agencies to get this done and support it and actually be able to implement it. So I think we circulated this letter several times. I didn't receive much by way of comment back. assume that meant everybody likes it. But if that's not the case, you know, we still take input if you've read it today as well.
So council members first, any comments or questions? Yeah.
The only comment that I had was down there at the bottom, I think it mentioned something to the effect of there was going to be some data that was going to be sent with this. What type of data or what type of information are you going to include with the letter?
That's a good question. I think it's an open question that we didn't resolve last time. I think we were looking at including some of the studies, the economic study that was done through Great Salt Lake on how important it is for the economics of Utah. Tom and I had reached out to Steve Clyde and Warren Peterson to see if they would be willing to send letters in support, attach a letter to it, because of their different roles that they're fulfilling right now. I think that would be helpful. But I think it's a good question. What other information do we want to attach?
The one suggestion I would have is, I don't know how you would tailor it, if somebody could do a white paper or just a synopsis of the information that was in that National Geographic about the dry lakes. I think the best way to learn is to learn from somebody else's mistakes, and if you know that's the worst case scenario, it doesn't paint a good picture.
Yeah, so I know Marcel has done a lot of work in that regard.
We've got our two projects on the way.
I was going to say,
I've got these two projects. Unfortunately, yeah. They won't be, one contemplated to be completed in February and the other in June.
You could set that task on both.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
And our Lake Health Report also we can attach. That's a good point. Thomas.
I like Jeff's comment there. In my mind's eye, I was the synoptic executive summary reports from the economic, the reports they produce. I think timing-wise, having something, not only the hydrology and ecosystems, the time is marching on. In terms of, we now have a remarkable bit of collaboration within the Natural Resources Department, and so that star is kind of lined up, and legislatively kind of be nice to fit it within this window where it sits right on the heels of. The legislators are patting each other on the back, and the people who participate in these teams on helping collaborate and pull things together. So while we don't have the results of some of these studies, it might be worth just putting together the issues that are before us. And as Jeff mentioned, the National Geographic write-up, and I think some of the stuff from the Great Salt Lake Issues Forum, there's a couple of synoptic things on, studies in the Great Salt Lake and the dry lake bed, and then how that might have air quality impacts. It's a couple of synoptic things that we could attach.
Yeah, you do have the results of what's happened elsewhere, right?
Yeah.
Around the globe. I mean, those are results that you can point to, and you can point to the Great Salt Lake saying, we're potentially headed there as well.
Yeah.
The one other thing that catches my attention is, has there been any study that shows the effect of the lake on snowpack? I mean, the lake effect, mm-hmm. and how that has changed with the increasing or the decreasing level of the lake. Because you get far enough out on this trajectory, and pretty soon you're affecting tourism, the ski resorts, the drinking water. And so I think those things need to be understood as well. I mean, it's a circular deal. And so the lake affects the mountains affect the lake. And if you like you mentioned, if it gets to the point where it's irreversible, then what do you do?
Jeff, we have, there are some studies that are not well fleshed out, not driving towards conclusions other than the Wasatch Front and the amount of 5 to 8% of the snowpack is derived from the Great Salt Lake effect. And then the other part that is less quantified from a water resource perspective is when you get the dust coming off off the desert, that has an effect of actually melting the snow quicker. But I think those are issues that we can say need to be at the table within this collaborative resource management issues, holistic review. So listening to you talk about that, we have a couple of existing synoptic reports, right? we have some really fresh stuff from the Great Salt Lake Issues Forum that we could even mention. There's some recent studies with the two, three fundamental either concerns or conclusions that come out of those that feed into, it's not just an environmental issue, it's a economic issue, a public health issue, it's a that tells the need.
Right.
But yeah, I think we should, you bring up something that we should identify.
And I think they need to be short enough. I mean, I don't think you get too far down in the weeds because they will probably be red. I mean, we need to keep it fairly high level.
Yeah.
Other comments? Not from folks in the room, other folks in the room. Yes.
The bolded policy statement low down on the page refers only to water flow. It doesn't mention water quality. Do you want to insert something having to do with water quality, especially regarding changes in kinds of inputs to Great Salt Lake? As a greater concentration of sewage treatment or sewage effluent, perhaps, in the future?
From my perspective, we have existing State Water Quality Act, and, you know, falling within the federal coal water quality. So we have statutory guidance to protect the lake. We have zero statutory or policy saying, quote, keep water in the lake. That's just quantity. And if the lake dries up, there's no law that says that was a bad thing or we shouldn't do that. So nothing against the water quality side, but I think the focus here in, when I would propose this is part of my wheelhouse is water rights and conversations on the water right community and the municipal side is we need more water. So yet the people that I work for, we're trying to get more water to provide for growth, and it's going to come at the expense of the Great Salt Lake without this conversation. On the water quality side, I think we do have a number of rules and regulations that protect that. This is trying to address a specific gap. But to Jeff's point about the holistic view, if water quality is tied to water flow. So my recommendation would be, if, you know, there's a couple of asks, it's the holistic view, but at the outcome, Governor, if we don't decide to carve out some water for the Great Salt Lake, it will dry up. So it's water resources, it's water rights, it's the divisions you report to that also speak to natural resources and parks and recreation and the other elements.
I concur with your comments there, Tom. I think we're focusing on an area where there needs to be some policy direction, whereas on the water quality side there already is.
That's just my thoughts anyway. So.
Okay, other comments before we move to, yes, go ahead, Brian.
Building off the conversation earlier regarding conflict and environmental conflict, I haven't seen as much inclusion of the agricultural community in this process. And maybe it's going on behind the scenes that I don't see it, but this letter might be prefaced to or by contacting folks at Utah Water Users Association, things like that, so they don't kind of get blindsided.
Yeah. I think we've talked about a list of folks we want to alert before we go to the governor, some of them have been alerted to before the department heads and others, so I think we don't intend to blindside very many people. I don't want to. We would like to blindside some people.
And Don's joking. On that list, obviously, the first ones to speak with would be, you know, like talk about the lieutenant governor, the department heads, and then from there, even from the ag community to the municipal water districts. We know these folks, and they're at the table too. But we don't want to surprise anybody. Darren Hess was here. He's we were in the Water Conservancy District. Part of his charge is ag and NNI. But yet, I've had conversations with him and his boss that they're equally interested in the Great Salt Lake.
Yeah, and I think we try to carefully craft this letter so that it is really balanced. I mean, we haven't, hopefully it's balanced enough that nobody's going to take offense to this. I mean, the idea is that we take all these interests and see if we truly can collaborate in a way or, you know, to develop a policy for the benefit of all. I don't know if that's possible.
All right, great. I think we've had several meetings of discussion, and the time has come to act. I'd recommend that we adopt a motion to adopt this letter as policy of the council, and that we ask that our committee of Tom and Jeff move forward to make the appropriate contacts prior to actually going to the governor's office. I'd ask Tom if he'd be willing to supervise the effort to put together the attachments.
Okay.
Willingly.
Is that like Rochambeau with Jeff or something? Yes, we will. Well, I'll work on that.
All right. I don't know what else to add to that recommendation, but that would be the essence of the motion.
On that note, Don, I may reach out to other, you know, depending on the audience we go to, you know, we have folks from the counties and from the industries that may help carry the voice that it's not just a singular issue, it affects everybody across the front.
Yeah. So. But again, the motion is just in essence would be to adopt the this letter as the policy of the council and ultimately get it to the governor.
I'm not sure who has the most recent version of the letterhead. I think it needs to be updated with the new council members' names. I think TNC, that your graphics guy, has that, so maybe if you put the letter on the advisory council letterhead, just make sure it's the most recent version.
Okay. Someone willing to make a motion?
Yeah, I'll move.
Is there a second?
Thank you.
Any debate or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed nay?
Aye.
Any abstentions?
Thanks,
any, well, I guess that's it, it's unanimous. Thank you. Thanks to Tom and Jeff for the great work putting this together and moving it forward. Appreciate that. If we had more time, I'd raise an issue that was raised with me. Our objective here with the letter is to get the governor to establish a state policy to effectively administer water flow to the Great Salt Lake to maintain or increase water levels. Perhaps we ought to consider, as was suggested to me by myself, the possibility of seeking a resolution during the legislative session adopting a similar policy. There's a non-binding resolution, but one would state the sense of the legislature that this ought to be a policy. We'll take that under advisement and perhaps discuss it at our next meeting. Mm-hmm. Or before. Okay, next item on the agenda is our public comment period. Let me get see a raise of hands to figure out how to parcel out the time here. Who would like to make a comment? Marissa? Nika? About how much time do you need, Marissa?
I need you too.
Oh, you gotta punch me if you're behind. What do you need, a minute, 2 minutes?
Yeah,
2 minutes. Okay, Rusty, we're up for
three.
Well, you can.
I can name them.
You go first.
Okay. Quick shout out. If you want to understand what the Natural Resources Collaboration, aka Environmental Dispute, folks do, December 8th?
6th.
It's free, and you can see what they do. And if you want motivation, they'll motivate you. They're fantastic. I was one of the ones trained by Danya in the collaboration course. So I can probably, Water Resources soon can probably give you some help in getting the governor's attention about the Great Salt Lake, because our feasibility study will be coming out at the, sometime in the early beginning of next year, 2019. I want to give you a heads up. It's a very engineering feasibility heavy. It's about trying to figure out how a system would even work from an engineering standpoint. And always the big question we always get up front is, what does it cost? And so that's the big heavy question to involved in this feasibility study. Along with that, what my hope is it's not gonna be a report that goes on the shelf because Bear River development needs are pushed out and we don't talk about it for 10 years and then a whole new set of people try to talk in 10 years. I'm hoping that this is something that we get to anyone and everyone that would like to, and I would love to see constructive comments back. Tell us, what I would like to see is, where do we go from here? Okay, y'all have done this, we need to look at this, We're not in a pre-NEPA, we're not in a NEPA process, we're far out from that. But why not get started on some of those studies now? Of course, they'll have to be updated as we get back to wherever we think we need to be on those needs. So that, yes.
So the feasibility studies for the Bear River development.
Bear River development system. How would pumps, reservoirs, pipelines work together?
And
to make that even work.
Is it based on what you presented a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
Or is it, okay.
Yeah.
So you did a feasibility study on?
It was a pipeline concept report, trying
okay.
to figure out pipeline, because we were worried about corridors, pipeline corridors. And when we started that, we were looking at 2030, 2035 for an initial need. Please be advised that this report is a 30,000 foot look. It's very conceptual. It is also a look at a full system delivering a full 220,000 acre feet, which the numbers are not showing is what is needed on day one. That would be, we're assuming, over decades. We haven't even looked at that. Along with that, and please, you're welcome to contact me any questions about that, but I would love for you to get the report, look through it, and then I'd be happy to sit down and talk with you, send us a memo from your agency. Love for that. Is that it? Oh,
but
I was Don's done. And we give a shout out to this letter. We advise that a focused effort should be given to create policy decisions that will effectively balance the state's needs for growth while minimizing the downward trend in lake elevations. We'd love to be a part of that conversation. And where the Bear River development is, we'd love to be in that room. And shout out to some of the folks that get us in that room already. So, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Nika, go ahead.
Thank you. Just to go back a little bit to Danya's presentation, just some thoughts that I had running through my mind as y'all were talking about. We have a window of time. We're looking at the legislature. We're looking for policy direction. We need to enter into the political realm. In part of my life, I just sit back and kind of watch a few things. And I'm kind of noticing that your coworker, Natalie Gossner, seems to be in the policy direction area. And the studies that come out of the Kim Gardner Institute are policy direction. And if this topic in some way, shape, or form could come under her signature, that's a goal. I mean, I think that would be a very positive, have a positive effect for this whole deal here.
Wonderful, thank you.
Thank you, Nika.
Just a reminder, next Tuesday, the Bear River Commission is having their meeting.
No.
Wednesday?
No.
Wednesday?
No.
It's the 20th. I have to check. No, it's next week because I got a call.
Okay, good.
Anyway, and their next meeting is in April. And I'm just wondering, even though the commission works as it does, the opportunity to create learning opportunities and insights to commissioners who aren't a part of the Utah conversation, perhaps the outcome of this letter, depending upon who the messenger would be, that would be a wonderful forum to present this expression that was developed through the council, presented to the governor, as, again, a learning opportunity for the commission that there's great concern on behalf of Utah and the lake and its future, respectively. Just a thought.
Thank you, Lynn.
Don, she only took a minute and a half. Can I have 30 seconds?
25 and you're good.
Got it. There is going to be some corridor preservation activities through a bottleneck at Dane Willard Bay in Box Elder County. There's concern of where we could preserve some corridor through there. So that is some stuff that we've been working on to have a shared corridor with UTA. They're looking to be front runner eventually, trying to stay ahead of homes if we possibly can. So.
Near Willard Bay, did you say?
Yeah, through that bottleneck section. I can't drive through there anymore without thinking about it. Thanks, Don.
Thank you. So are there other topics that members would like to discuss, raise, deliberate? Have suggestions for future council meeting topics? We have some follow-up items here to come back, but always looking for your suggestions.
I'm wondering if it might be useful for the council to hear about the proposed development of a communal track on the Union Pacific Railroad Causeway as it pertains to the prospect of industrial service on Promontory Peninsula from that track.
Other suggestions?
Laura Alt is talking today with Jeff Hartley about the inland port presentation. And I know that the Great Salt Lake Tech team is interested in hearing about that as well. Maybe it could be an opportunity for a joint meeting or something, but inland port if you're interested.
Other suggestions? Yes.
Whereas there's a new water conservancy district in Cache County, and it's up and running now, and they've hired an executive director, so they're a lot more formally organized. You may want to hear from them, and it'd be kind of a two-way conversation, I think.
Others? Tom?
Just a question, maybe I'm just totally out of the loop, but I'm interested to know the current status of wetlands mitigation banking and how well that's working here in Utah, if there's opportunity or successes and failures.
Okay. Others? All right. We need to discuss a meeting schedule for 2019. During 2018, we've continued the practice of meeting on the second Wednesday at 10 o'clock of January, March, May, July, September, and November. I think we, in fact, did hold all six meetings this year. In the past, we've missed some, but does that schedule still work? Let me ask Commissioner Scott, is your meeting schedule consistent or is it changing?
No, we switched it so that our one commission meeting's in the evening on these days, and so this works good.
Other council members? This has also been circulated to those who are not here. I'll just double check with them and make sure, but hearing no objection, we'll meet next on January 9th at 10 to 11:30 a.m. Does anyone object to this meeting location? It seems to accommodate us quite well. We'll meet here in January then if it's available, Laura.
Okay, I will check on the availability. There is a new Farmington Bay Eccles Education Center. And it's beautiful, and it's a really cool opportunity to get out and see some birds and meet. They have a great meeting room, so we may want to look at that. And I think it's the same exit that you take to get here, and you just head further west, maybe in the spring or something.
Good suggestion. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll entertain a motion to adjourn right on time.
Okay.
I had a question, but I didn't want to. Sure. You have one finger. Yeah. And that is in the line. I think more of the latter. That's for my coworkers. I don't know. Issues, but most of that's like so I wouldn't expect them to have gone through like four destinations, but they would be designated.
By the way, you're not allowed to leave the room unless your name is on the roll that was passed around.
Where
is
it? In the back.
So it was really more of a geographic boundary on that.
Yeah. Based on actually doing the ground underneath.
That's why I didn't want to ask that. But yeah, it's a project. It's an
absolute
It's funny that